from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported last week that 114,000 jobs were added last month, and overall unemployment decline was at 7.8%. That's the first drop below 8% in nearly 4 years. This gave fresh ammunition to the Obama campaign after a drop in the polls following the first presidential debate with former Massachusetts governor and GOP candidate Mitt Romney in Denver. And in this Forum segment, we want to examine the effect of these new numbers on the presidential campaign and on the economy. And joining us is Secretary of Labor, U.S. Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis, who, by the way, is in California. There's a dedication in the Central Valley for Cesar Chavez, or on behalf of Cesar Chavez. And Secretary Solis, good to have you with us.
Yes, thank you. It's good to be home in California.
Well, I guess the way to begin our discussion with you is by thinking about what the Romney campaign said in response to these statistics. Largely, no corner was turned, and maybe the numbers are even disappointing.
Well, it's unfortunate, but the reality is that this is the first time in 4 years that we've seen the unemployment number tick down to 7.8%. We haven't seen it that low since 2009. We've added 5.2 million private sector jobs. We've actually turned the corner, and I think that it's good. It's a good day for us. Last Friday, when we reported the numbers, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, as you know, is a nonpartisan civil service organization, and they've been doing this work now for the past 70 years. And we're happy to see that we're seeing a turnaround in terms of more growth, jobs being added in transportation, warehousing, financial activities, business and professions, and education and health.
Well, I know that it's often characterized as nonpartisan, but Jack Welch, the former, and I know you've found this insulting because you've said so on a number of occasions, Jack Welch, the former head of General Electric, said essentially that the books were cooked and that this was the Chicago guys doing anything to establish certainty that Obama will be reelected, President Obama will be reelected. And again, you not only find this insulting, but you find it, frankly, unacceptable, I assume?
Well, I think it stretch. I do think it's ludicrous for them to say that, because we know that this is a top-notch organization, civil servants that are the top-rated economists and statisticians in the country. They serve both Republican and Democratic administrations. There's no way that you can penetrate those numbers. In fact, the last time I heard something similar was back in the Nixon era, when Nixon was accusing the BLS of changing numbers because the statisticians and experts there come from the Jewish community.
Do you also think, however, that Governor Romney might have a point when he says that this is largely reflective of part-time employment, or that essentially you're excluding the unemployed who aren't seeking employment? You're taking people's word for it.
Well, he refers to the U6 survey that's done that also includes people that are working part-time. And the survey that we use is the U3, and that shows that people that have gotten jobs. And so whether you look at the U3 or the U6, the difference there is that part-time workers are still working. So, I mean, that's a job. And we know people want to have full-time jobs. There's no doubt about that. But the numbers have improved, and we haven't changed anything in terms of how we interpret that. And I, quite frankly, see those reports the day of their release at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then they're made public after 8:30. So there is no whatsoever manipulation on our part. And I think that the Republicans, again, are just grasping at anything that they can attack and think that that's somehow going to make the day. And the facts are that we've created jobs. The president created jobs in manufacturing, 500,000, 250,000 attributed to the automobile industry alone, because he said he wasn't going to turn his back on the auto workers, the American auto workers.
But the manufacturing numbers are down, aren't they?
Just for this report, but very slightly. You still see strong economic growth in the area of automobiles. People are purchasing cars. 14 million, we're almost back up at the rates we were a few years ago. And we continue to plow down, making investments with community colleges and manufacturing groups so that we can prepare workers, because on any given day you have about 3 million jobs that go unfilled. And employers want people that have certificates and licensing.
Talking with Hilda Solis, U.S. Secretary of Labor, and she's here in California for a dedication of the Cesar Chavez National Monument in the Central Valley. One final question for you, Secretary Solis. You think we really have turned a corner here, and that the numbers are going to continue to show that?
I think that given where we started when we were hemorrhaging 800,000 jobs and more, that the investments that the president made with the support of some members of Congress, obviously not all from the other side of the aisle, they have paid off. We have actually been able to refortify and look at planning for the future, and that's what really the difference is between the choices of this presidency and the one that Romney would like to see, where he would just like to give tax cuts to the very wealthy and forget about the middle class. So I just want to emphasize, I don't look at just one report as determining where our future is. I have to look back at all the reports that have occurred under our administration, and the facts are that we have created jobs, and there's much more confidence in the marketplace on the part of our consumers.
U.S. Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis, she's with President Obama in Keene, California, for the establishment of the Cesar Chavez National Monument, and we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, too.
I'll tell you who else is joining us for this segment. Tammy Frisbee's here in studio. She's a research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford and an advisor to the Romney campaign, teaches American politics at Stanford. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Thank you for joining us. Michael Linden is also with us from Washington. He directs the Tax and Budget Policy Program for the Center for American Progress. Welcome, Michael Linden.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you as well. And Tammy Frisbee, well, you heard Secretary of Labor Solis say these are completely reliable. And your thoughts?
The numbers are reliable. I think it was unfortunate for Jack Welch to come out and impugn the professional career civil servants at the Department of Labor. I think the Bureau of Labor Statistics is producing accurate and reliable numbers. But when you look at that number, what that number is telling you is that this economy is still not on the trajectory that we need it to be to get back to our even what's called potential GDP. That is where we think the economy should have been had we not had the downturn that we did. And we are, in fact, as the president says, moving in the right direction, but not at the velocity that we need to bring this back to a real recovery. And if you make a comparison, not just with where we are now and where we were at the beginning of the Obama administration, but where we are now and where we would have been if we had pursued pro-growth policies like we did in the 1980s, we are far off the mark. If you look at GDP growth since the end of the recession, we have been growing at an average of 2.2%. And of course, for the last several quarters, that would be growth that we would dream of. We've been growing at like 1.5%. But back in the 1980s, we were growing at 5.5%. So when you have an economy that is sluggish like this, that is producing jobs at a lower rate than we need to keep up with population growth, it's hard for me to look at the American people and hard for Governor Romney to look at the American people and say that this is the right direction for the country.
There is a notion generally coming out of the Romney campaign, which you're affiliated with, that somehow his business experience and really being a business leader at Bain and the like will turn the ship around, so to speak. There's also kind of a counterargument that presidents don't necessarily have as much influence as some attribute when it comes to the economy, and particularly making dramatic shifts like that. And actually, the Democratic record is far better in terms of prosperity and economics in recent years than the Republican record.
Well, I'd actually be interested to look at the data on that. I would disagree with—
Talking particularly about unemployment, but, you know, during the Clinton years, things were very strong and so forth. Yeah.
Clinton years. Glad to talk about the Clinton years. So I know that, in fact, Michael Linden has done some work comparing Republican administrations to the Clinton years, and that is painted as supply-side economics versus non-supply-side in this work at the Center for American Progress. But what you're considering to be non-supply-side, I think, is a mischaracterization of what was going on policy-wise during the 1990s. So, of course, Clinton did raise some marginal tax rates on income. But he also, once you had the Republicans in Congress, engaged in what I think even those scholars at the Center for American Progress would characterize as supply-side policies. So you had a reduction in the top capital gains tax rate. And if you look at one of the charts they have at the Center for American Progress, it looks at tax rates and then the size of the deficit. And at one point, it notes that you have the Clinton tax increases. But then it does not note that you have that cut in the capital gains rate, which we believe spurs investment, right? Spurs economic growth, and then you have more revenue coming into the Treasury, and therefore you'd expect the deficit to go down. So I think that there's some cherry picking of the evidence here, actually, when we're talking about the record of both Republican and Democratic presidents. And if we're talking about what spurred economic growth under the Clinton presidency that we can actually attribute to policy and not innovation in the private sector, I think that there's a good case to be made that much of that is what we would consider to be consistent with Republican policies and also the vision that Governor Romney has for reforming the tax code.
So you're saying implicitly that presidential policies can make a major difference, and you would expect that under the leadership of Governor Romney that would be the case?
Oh, yes, certainly. I mean, government policy affects the direction of the economy. It affects the confidence that job creators and investors have. It creates a system of incentives that then shapes how people decide where to put their money. And so I would expect that if you had Governor Romney in the White House, that we would have leadership that was trying to work toward permanent policies. And I think that that is really the core difference between what we've seen over the last 4 years and what President Obama is proposing and what Governor Romney is proposing. And that is that we aren't going to have these temporary policies, these one-off tax breaks, this level of uncertainty in the policy and economic policy environment. And instead, you would have permanent policies, because the bottom line here is that you can't get permanent economic growth off temporary economic policy.
Tammy Frisbee again here with us in studio as a research fellow with the Hoover Institution at Stanford and an advisor to the Romney campaign. She teaches American politics at Stanford. Michael Linden is director of tax and budget policy with the Center for American Progress. And guilty as charged of cherry-picking, Michael Linden?
No, not at all. Look, it is true that under President Clinton in 1997, he passed a capital gains tax cut. But if you look at growth and jobs before that tax cut and after that tax cut, they are virtually the same. There is absolutely no change in the economic direction of the country when he passed that tax cut, that supply-side tax cut. And I agree, that was a supply-side tax cut. It didn't produce any boost to the economy. George W. Bush became president several years later. He passed another round of supply-side tax cuts. Not only did the economy not get better, it got worse. And then yet again, he passed another supply-side tax cut in 2003, promised enormous growth, enormous jobs. None of that came to fruition. The simple fact is that the emphasis that conservatives and Governor Romney and Tammy place on the top market income tax rate is misplaced. There's no evidence for that in history, and certainly not in the last 25 years. So this idea that if we just cut taxes for rich people, it will produce some sort of magical economic boom is perfectly nice in theory, and it certainly sounds good for rich people, but in truth, it hasn't had any kind of real effect. There's been no trickling down. I find it interesting to hear Governor Romney and Tammy praise Bill Clinton's economic management when, you know, President Clinton has endorsed strongly the president. The president has called for going back to the President Clinton's own tax code, the exact same tax code, especially for people at the top. So it seems kind of disingenuous to claim that Clintonomics is similar to Romneynomics.
Well, what about Governor Romney's statement that these unemployment figures are not what a real recovery looks like or should look like?
Well, I think there's no question that we could and should be growing faster, but if you compare where we are today to where we were when the president took office, there's also no comparison. You know, we were contracting in the fourth quarter of 2008 by almost 9% annually. We were losing 700,000 to 800,000 jobs a month, and now we've had consistent, steady private sector job growth. In fact, if our public sector, where we've actually suffered hundreds of thousands of job losses, if our public sector was growing at the same rate that it had under the Bush administration, we would have several hundred thousand additional jobs. Actually, we'd have more than a million additional jobs, and the unemployment rate would be one full percentage point lower. So part of what's holding us back is fiscal contraction forced upon us by conservatives in Congress. So if we want more of that, then certainly that's Governor Romney's approach.
Well, we were talking in the last segment about gas prices, and gas prices were lower under George W. Bush. I wonder how you account for that, particularly in light of the fact that there are many who say the Republicans are so closely tied in with petroleum interests.
I think gas prices are not something that the president controls in any real way. There's no real connection. You can do short-term things like let some of the oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but really, gas prices are not within the purview of the president's power. I think Tammy would agree with that.
She's nodding her head, yes. And actually, what I want to do, since we have one moment of agreement here, is take the opportunity to invite our listeners to join this discussion. President Obama had what has been characterized as a bright spot in a week when challenger Mitt Romney was widely considered to have won the debate, and that was the jobs report, and that's what we're talking about. The nation's unemployment rate is at the lowest level since the month that President Obama took office, and that's according to the latest Labor Department report. We're talking about that in light of not only the ongoing battle for the presidency between President Obama, the incumbent, and Governor Romney, the challenger from the GOP, but also wrestling with the methodology of the labor statistics report. Tammy Frisbee's already on record here saying she trusts these reports, as opposed to people like Jack Welch, who have expressed their concern about the veracity of the reports or the reliability or the credibility. But there is a kind of imprecision that's often charged with these reports, and you may want to comment on that as well. How scientific are they, and how much of a sampling really are they? There are two reports we should mention. There's the Current Employment Statistics Survey, which is so-called payroll survey, and then there's a household survey. And indeed, I'd like to hear from listeners on this whole question here about how much this has affected or is going to affect the presidential campaign. That's the essential question we're dealing with. And our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement, and please feel free to join us now. Toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any of your questions or comments on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, and you can also go to our Facebook page. Tammy Frisbee with us in studio, research fellow at Hoover, and Michael Linden, director of tax and budget policy at the Center for American Progress. We also spoke with Hilda Solis, the U.S. Secretary of Labor, and an opportunity for you to weigh in here. Here's a listener who says, in fact, about the different kinds of studies that are done that I alluded to a moment ago. The drop in the unemployment rate was based on the household survey, while the number of jobs Mr. Krasny cited is the establishment survey. The household survey showed a gain of 853,000 jobs, the largest in 29 years. Using monthly employment data since 2002, there is virtually a zero probability that this excessively large increase is real. Bottom line, no economist worthy of the name believes the 853,000 figure. And instead of having Ms. Solis on, how about someone who actually understands the data? She's a shill for the administration. Well, this is kind of strong and harsh language, but what would you say about that, Tammy Frisbee, the 853,000 figure?
I would say that the economists at the Bureau of Labor Statistics are using a standard set of guidelines by which they're producing these numbers. And that the larger point and the most important thing that we can do moving forward is to not be arguing about the numbers that are produced in the right way, but to think about what this actually means for the economy and really what it means to most people for the presidential election. And for all the conversation that we're having about the particular numbers and the interpretation, the bottom line is that when we look at how Americans have decided presidential elections in the past, it's actually not based most predictably on the unemployment rate. And it's not based even on GDP growth. It's based on personal disposable income. That's our best predictor of how voters...
That's often what people mean when they say it's the economy, stupid, more than numbers.
Well, yes, and a particular measure of how the economy is doing, and that is a pocketbook measure.
But if somebody's unemployed, their pocketbook's going to be a lot more threadbare.
That's right. And if somebody is in a part-time job when they really need to be in a full-time job, and you made that point earlier about that is something that led to this reduction in the unemployment rate, is not people leaving the workforce, which is one of the things that was in part driving the reduction in the unemployment rate, the tick down that we had seen in some previous months. But this time, it was people taking part-time jobs. And if what they really need is to be able to have a higher income with a full-time job for their family, and disposable income also means what's left over after you've paid health insurance, and if you're in a part-time job, you probably don't have health insurance benefits. And so those are the kind of factors that are really going to matter for moving forward. One last point I'd make about this is that when we look at the political science about election forecasting. We do just as good a job forecasting elections based on the April economic data as we do the November economic data.
Well, since we're talking about forecasting, and I want to get our callers involved in this, but Michael Linden, I'd like to get a reaction from you from a website comment from a listener named Beth who says, how many of those no longer looking for work or out of unemployment benefits simply aren't being counted? And how many of the jobs filled were filled by one person working one or more part-time jobs and not a full-time job? Unless we have a 7.8 rate for one full quarter, nothing counts with me.
I mean, I have to say I agree. You know, Tammy and I think agree on this. We need to ignore the numbers skeptics and focus on what the numbers mean. These are surveys. They come with error. There's no question about that. But the error could be in either direction. These are the best guess of very, very highly trained professionals. There's no point in arguing about whether or not the numbers are real or aren't real. This is the best data that we have at this moment. So let's use the data and make our policies and have our discussions based on that going forward. I totally agree with Tammy. It is not worth our time to debate people who don't believe in the basic data.
All right. Let us find out what our listeners have to say via our callers. And Bruce, join us. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Michael. Thanks. I would like to say I believe the numbers. My question is this, perhaps for both panelists. By way of example, it's my strong impression that Reagan raised rates in spite of his philosophy for various reasons, including military. Then Clinton was the beneficiary of a lot of Reagan policies because so many of these things take time to take effect, and particularly establishing consistency, perhaps. And you could argue continuing that way. And I'd like to know, it drives me crazy sometimes to hear people say, well, if we implement a tax rate, we'll see growth tomorrow in either direction. Could your guest address the sort of time phase shift it takes for policies to take effect and whether or not that speaks to the issue of today's slow rates are the result of the policies implemented in the past? And I'll take my answer out there.
All right, Bruce, and thank you for that question. Let me go first to you, Michael Linden.
Well, there is definitely a time shift. There's no question about it. I don't know that I totally agree that President Clinton was the beneficiary of Reagan's policies, considering that he took office 4 full years after Reagan left office. But there's no question that the policies of a previous president do carry over. President Clinton definitely benefited from George H.W. Bush raising taxes in 1990. That helped get the economy, helped get the deficit down, which helped reduce the debt, which helped bring the economy back when President Clinton took over and continued that path.
Also helped defeat President George H.W. Bush when he said, read my lips. Yeah,
it did. That was, you know, there's no question that that's true, although I think, you know, I can't speak for him, but looking back, that was clearly the right policy. It helped contribute to balanced budgets that we saw the following decade. President Obama similarly took over in the midst of a very serious recession and was burdened by, you know, the Bush policies coming into his presidency. You know, for all the talk about how low taxes should be helping us, it's worth remembering that we have had the Bush tax policies in place throughout this entire recession. So this notion that lower taxes will somehow help us out of this recession is belied by the mere fact that we've had low taxes all the way through this recession, and it has not seemed to have done very much for us.
Now, let me get Tammy Frisbee on record here. And I ought to say, by the way, there's a new article in The Economist, British published Economist, about the election, and essentially it takes the point that President Obama may have won in 2008 because of the economy, but he may lose in 2012 for the same reason. That's The Economist. Tammy Frisbee?
On the point about our current low tax rates not producing economic growth, the key thing to remember is that our current tax rates are temporary tax rates. These are not permanent tax rates. They are set to expire. We are about to plunge off the fiscal cliff unless something is done on the lame duck session. That will happen on January 1st. And I'd like your listeners to ask themselves, if you were an employer, and I'm sure many of your listeners may in fact be small business owners or make management and hiring decisions at corporations, would you be making hiring decisions based on temporary tax and economic policy? No. Right? So you can't say that low tax rates, when people are expecting that they may expire and they will have a tax increase, can be driving economic growth in the same way they could if they were permanent.
Here's Scott. I'm sorry, Michael Linden, go ahead.
I was just going to ask Tammy, so because the Bush tax cuts were always temporary, they were always set to expire, is that how you explain why the Bush economic record was so dismal because all of his tax cuts were temporary?
I would disagree that the Bush economic record is dismal. I think, of course, when we're talking about the economy, right? I mean, you and I agree, Michael, that we can't just peg economic growth or sluggish growth on one thing. And when you look at the Bush record, right, we have to start with the fact that Bush comes into office and then we have 9/11, which completely changes the game. And so there are lots of things going on, right? That's just one example. And so, yes, the Bush tax cuts were implemented based on a 10-year period, but as we've reached the end of that period, we did not extend them for another 10 years.
And we could extend this argument probably a long time. Let me get Scott on here. Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to ask for Tammy's comments on how the conservative side seems to consistently underplay the global effect of the shock that hit the entire global financial system, which in many ways is still playing out today and may very well play out for another 5 to 10 more years. And how the conservatives conveniently look at the end of the recession from a technical standpoint here in the United States, but we live in a completely interconnected global financial capital and labor market.
This is a good question and one that I'm happy to answer because it gives us the opportunity to look at some global comparisons. So Ed Lazier, who is a professor in the Graduate School of Business at Stanford and is one of my colleagues at Hoover, he's a senior fellow, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors for President George W. Bush, has done some work looking at economic growth comparing the U.S. to other countries, to other major economies. And when you look at that and you compare quarterly GDP growth since the end of 2009, you see that the U.S. has had slower economic growth than Germany and France. And the question then is, why is that? We all operate in the same global economy, and so it comes back to causing us to question whether the policies that have been pursued, both the things that we have done and have not done policy-wise, have led to that slower economic growth than we might otherwise have been able to achieve.
You want to comment on that, Michael Linden, as we come
sure,
to the close here?
I just think it's I think it's interesting that Tammy didn't mention the economy that's probably the most similar to us, which is, of course, the United Kingdom. And they have had terrible economic growth. In fact, they've slipped back into a recession. Their unemployment rate has gone back up. And one of the main reasons for that is, of course, their proximity to the EU makes it harder for them. I want to concede that. But they've also pursued a strategy of fiscal consolidation, of austerity. And what economists said was going to happen, happened. They slipped back into recession. Their unemployment rate spiked. They are not even able to really bring down their debt because their economic growth has gotten so bad.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. We've come actually to the end of this hour. I want to thank you, Michael Linden from the Center for American Progress. Thank Tammy Frisbee from the Hoover Institution at Stanford and Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis, who joined us earlier. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We have another hour of Forum ahead. We're going to talk about Point Reyes. It's an extraordinary historical story, and it's an ongoing one, 50-year anniversary. Thank you for being with us. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our producers are Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez, and I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.